now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, and a great day for economic news. This is nonpartisan. Basically, it's American to root for this country to do well and for more people to make more money, to raise their standard of living. And that appears to be happening. There was new news this morning in terms of employment numbers. Non-farm payrolls increased 303,000 for the month. In other words, 303,000 more people working this last month than the month before. This is way above the Dow Jones estimate. The estimate had been for a rise of 200,000. It was actually 300,000. Meanwhile, the unemployment rate edged lower, 3.8%, even though the labor force participation moved higher to 6.2%. In other words, you have more people going into the workforce and getting jobs. Wages rose 0.3% for the month and 4.1% from a year ago. That's all kind of amazing. Healthcare led with 72,000 new jobs, followed by government, 71,000, leisure and hospitality, 49,000, construction by 39,000. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Remember at one point, one of his great, memorable quotes was President Biden, when he was Vice President Biden, was campaigning for Obama, and he said, all we care about is a three-letter word, jobs, jobs, jobs.
Are you joking? Is this a joke?
Not a chance. No, not a joke. By the way, lots of back and forth on questions of health reports. And there's a huge New York Times piece about health questions concerning not only Joe Biden, but Donald J. Trump. And it turns out that, not to anyone's surprise, that Joe Biden, who is the president of the United States, he is occupying the Oval Office. He is our commander-in-chief, at least for another, what is it, in 9 months, something like that. But in any event, Joe Biden has released a great deal more information about his health. And what do we find out about it? We will get to that. Speaking about health, there's a very important article about the questionable nature of the casualty figures that you continually receive from Gaza. What's the source of those figures? And by the way, in terms of casualty figures in Gaza, we just had a big earthquake at 4.8 in the Richter scale earthquake in New York. It is the third strongest earthquake to strike for New York in 280 years. The epicenter was in New Jersey. And all of this is a very serious matter. Speaking of a serious matter, just moments ago, a Democratic congressman unveiled a bill to honor Donald Trump. Amazing. Is this actually showing that we are coming together as a country? Here is the story, just breaking. Three Democratic congressmen unveiled legislation today to rename a federal prison in Miami after former President Donald Trump. The bill offered by Representatives Jerry Conley of Virginia, Jared Moskowitz of Florida, and John Garamendi of California. Boy, he's been around for a long time. That bill comes in response to a measure introduced yesterday, which we covered, by a group of House Republicans, seven of them, who want to rename Washington Dulles International Airport after Trump. And by the way, Dulles International Dulles International is named after the Secretary of State for President Eisenhower, who served almost the entire two terms with Eisenhower. And he truly was one of the people whose application to foreign affairs helped win the Cold War. He was a serious guy, and not to be confused with his brother, Alan Dulles, who was head of the FBI. In any event, renaming Dulles International Airport after Trump, the Democrats' bill would rename the Miami Federal Correctional Institution in Florida the Donald J. Trump Federal Correctional Institution. And there is someone put together a good picture of what the airport might look like. Not the airport, actually, a way of combining the airport, I guess, and the prison. It shows a picture of sort of a snarling Trump in front of a guard tower that is labeled Trump Tower. When our Republican colleagues introduced their bill to rename Dulles Airport after Donald Trump, I said the more fitting option would be to rename a federal prison, Congressman Connolly said in a statement. I hope our Republican friends will join us in bestowing upon Donald J. Trump the only honor he truly deserves. Okay, concerning the earthquake in New York, here is what it sounded like on Fox News Live just after it happened. The center point was in Lebanon, New Jersey. Now, is it named Lebanon? Is that in relation to some kind of prediction or omen that the next front of battle will be between Lebanon and Israel because there was an earthquake in Lebanon, New Jersey? In any event, here's what it sounded like on Fox News Live.
Just got a bit weirder here in the Northeast. We can now report, according to the USGS, the Geological Survey here in the United States, that there's been an earthquake here in the Northeast. The preliminary indication is 4.8 magnitude. That's what we're reading right now. And the center point is a place in New Jersey called Lebanon, New Jersey, which is about 50 miles due west of New York City.
Oh, wow.
And there are a lot of our colleagues here in the building felt it, apparently. I did not. It's also being reported that it was felt in Albany, New York, the capital city,
wow,
which from Lebanon, New Jersey, by the way the bird flies, it's about 150 miles. So there could be significance found in that. We have not heard any reports about damages, but we're just searching the wires right now to figure out if there's something that we need to know to let you know. But no initial reports of a damage, according to the fire department.
Okay, and the earthquake now, they're saying, was felt all the way from Manhattan to Massachusetts. We got a phone call from our daughter, who lives in New York City, and she didn't feel the earthquake because she was on a bus at the time. But their various reactions to the earthquake indicate, well, there are regional differences here. If this earthquake had occurred in a part of the country that is more familiar with this kind of geological tremor, places like Los Angeles or San Francisco or Seattle, for that matter, it probably would not have created quite the same sensation. Speaking of creating a sensation, Robert Kennedy has just stepped into a series of missteps that are so bizarre, involving his attitude or multiple attitudes toward the January 6th riots. He is trying to play both sides. I guess that's the job of a third-party candidate. We'll bring you up to date on what's going on there and much more coming up on The Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
Show, I mentioned the latest developments with Robert Kennedy. That is connected, actually, to in some ways, to the ongoing speculation about President Trump's selection of a running mate, Tulsi Gabbard, the former congresswoman, U.S. Army veteran of tours of duty in Iraq. She has actually come forward and said she was asked by Robert Kennedy to be his running mate. She has left the Democratic Party. She is now an independent. And so, of course, it seemed to Kennedy, I guess, that Tulsi Gabbard would be a natural running mate and an effective one. So he approached her. She said no. And there is some speculation. We spoke about it on the show yesterday. Perhaps she said no because she is expecting a similar call inviting her to participate in a presidential ticket from Donald J. Trump. But we will see about that. Meanwhile, Kennedy, with his selected running mate, Nicole Shanahan, is facing all kinds of difficulties concerning statements and approaches to the January 6th riots in the Capitol. And the one thing that it seems to me should be very clear is that I think whenever this becomes a political issue, the more it becomes a political issue, the more damage it's going to do to Trump's campaign. And I don't know if that is Kennedy's desire here to speak up on the January 6th issues, but here's the background. The campaign of independent presidential candidate Robert Kennedy is walking back language used in campaign fundraising emails that refer to January 6th defendants as activists who have been stripped of their constitutional liberties. Doesn't that sound like he's making a pitch that would be aimed at that, say, one-third of the electorate that is very loyal and very enthusiastically behind Donald Trump? That's not one-third of the Republicans. It's a much higher percentage than that. It's maybe 70% of Republicans. But of the total electorate, okay, maybe one-third would share Trump's sympathy for the January 6th defendants, calling them heroes and patriots and incredible patriots and freedom fighters, and suggesting that they are now being held as hostages and political prisoners. In any event, the fundraising of appeals that were sent out on Wednesday and Thursday sought to stoke fears of government overreach, a core theme of the campaign, by comparing the plight of Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, whom the emails referred to as a political prisoner, with the legal cases against those arrested in connection to the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol. "We must free Assange now," the text in both fundraising messages reads. "The Brits want to make sure our government doesn't kill Assange. This is the reality that every American citizen faces. From Ed Snowden to Julian Assange to the J6 activists sitting in a Washington, D.C. jail cell stripped of their constitutional liberties." We spoke yesterday to Ryan Riley of NBC, who had just put together a book about who some of these people were and what their motivations were and how betrayed they were by the handling of the whole J6 riots from people above them in the MAGA universe, meaning President Trump and his closest associates. And the idea that all of a sudden you have Robert Kennedy endorsing Julian Assange and Edward Snowden and talking about these people who clearly had engaged in espionage and clearly had betrayed national secrets that jeopardize American security. What is he trying to do? The Kennedy campaign issued a statement and then a longer statement today. That statement was an error that does not reflect Mr. Kennedy's views. this statement about we must free Julian Assange now. It was inserted by a new marketing contractor and slipped through the normal approval process. Anybody who violated the law on January 6th should be subject to appropriate criminal and or civil penalties, a campaign spokesman added. The campaign messages were sent days after Kennedy argued on CNN that President Joe Biden represented a greater threat to democracy than Trump, even while acknowledging that the former president's effort to overturn the 2020 election clearly is a threat to democracy. Kennedy's argument centered about his being blocked, this is Donald Trump, on social media during the Biden administration. Well, okay, obviously that ended up working, at least to some extent, to President Trump's benefit because he launched Truth Social, which looked a few days ago before it went in the other direction on the stock market. It looked a few days ago to be increasing his net worth by, what, $6 billion? Okay. Today, there's a new statement from Kennedy. And Kennedy's statement is, January 6th is one of the most polarizing topics on the political landscape. I am listening to people of diverse viewpoints on it in order to make sense of the event and what followed. I want to hear every side. Okay, really, this is a dodge. When you talk about every side, you want to hear the side of people who believe that the evidence in the videos showing thousands of people storming the Capitol building, that those were all crisis actors or they were all people working for the FBI or were actually members of Antifa who had just put on their little red MAGA hats. It is quite clear that many of the January 6th protesters broke the law in what may have started as a protest but turned into a riot. Because it happened with the encouragement of President Trump and in the context of his delusion that the election was stolen from him, writes Robert Kennedy, many people see it not as a riot, but as an insurrection. I have not examined the evidence in detail, but reasonable people, including Trump opponents, tell me there is little evidence of a true insurrection. By the way, that's true. And it's one of the reasons I think it's wrong to call it an insurrection. But one of the things that's necessary and that is totally lacking from Robert Kennedy's point of view is, okay, if it was just supposed to be a peaceful protest, what did the people who were marching up to the Capitol at Trump's behest, what did they think was going to happen? And what about the gallows that they prepared for Mike Pence? Or is that all just part of this staged, phony drama? Is there more staged, phony drama? And on the Michael Medved Show, I always look forward to interchanges with veteran Washington political reporter Chris Saliza. He is the author of the recent book, Power Players, Sports, Politics, and the American Presidency. He also does a very popular Substack, which is at Chris Saliza, that's C-I-L-L-I-Z-Z-A. .substack.com. And he recently was speculating, and I thought the speculation was interesting enough so that we were eager to have him back on the show, about President Trump's selection for vice president. This is going to be very important because, well, for one thing, President Trump is an older guy. He's going to be 78 years old in June. And Biden, of course, is 81. Health concerns are very real for both individuals at that age. When do you think Trump is going to announce his vice presidential pick? Will he wait till the convention, or close to the convention as has been traditional, do you think?
I do, and I'll tell you why, Michael, because my view, maybe I shouldn't hit mute on my phone accidentally with my face. Apologies, I am here.
Okay, good. Go ahead. Don't mute yourself. Go forward.
Man, I had a lot of good thoughts there, but when I was on mute. So here's what I would say. I think that Donald Trump is best understood. It's like you're trying to understand him broadly. He's best understood as a reality sort of TV show guest and also producer. And I think he looks at most things through that lens. I definitely think he looks at the vice presidential race through that lens, which is, to answer your question, I think he wants to build up the drama and the excitement. I can't imagine him announcing it much before. I think the convention is July 15th or July 18th in Milwaukee. I would assume a couple days before we'll probably get something, which, by the way, doesn't mean that we won't hear drips and drabs here and there. Because remember, in building up the drama, you want to kind of put out some trial balloons. You want to throw a little red meat to the crowd. I just think he knows that eyes are on him, that people are interested in it, that people, to your point, are paying attention to it. And I think he's going to draw out the drama as long as he can.
Okay, and will that drama include a Final Four or maybe a Sweet 16? And if you were to talk about the Sweet 16, start with the long shots. Who do you think would be a surprise play? Because obviously, Mike Pence was not widely anticipated as a choice.
He was not.
He was not. A good
You're
choice
exactly right.
when it was made.
Yep.
But who are the long shots right now?
So I'll give you a few familiar faces who I think are long shots. I'll give you three: Nikki Haley, Ron DeSantis, and Vivek Ramaswamy. So if you ask me, from a purely political standpoint, who is the VP that could help Trump the most, with the acknowledgement that vice presidents don't usually help their presidential nominees all that much, but the one person who I think could help him the most is probably Nikki Haley. She is an Indian American woman. She is significantly younger than him. She has showed that she was quite good on the campaign trail. I don't think he's picking her, right? I just think he doesn't like her. He thought she stayed in the race too long. He thinks she's disloyal, all those things. So that's one.
And he calls her bird brain.
And he calls her bird brain. Though he called Mitch McConnell a broken down old crow and gladly accepted Mitch McConnell's endorsement, though that's not the same thing as putting him on the ticket. DeSantis and Vivek Ramaswamy, I think, are in a little bit, obviously both of them, like Haley, ran for president in 2024. I think they're in a little bit better shape with Trump, but Ramaswamy more so than DeSantis. You know, I think DeSantis, he's from Florida, he's younger, he is a favorite of some wing of the Republican Party. I don't see it happening because I think Trump just doesn't like him. Ramaswamy, I think, won't get it for the main reason that Trump is not interested in picking someone who's going to try to outshine him. Not necessarily outshine him, but try to outshine him. And I think that almost certainly would. I mean, what he demonstrated during the campaign was he will say and do anything for attention. And so I think that those three are names that you'll see mentioned a lot, I think, because they're well-known figures within the party. But I think ultimately are on the sort of long, long list.
I agree with you completely, Chris. So if we are, with the time remaining to us, going into the spirit of March Madness, the Final Four, who are they?
Okay, let me start from fourth and go backwards. So I did a top five, though you could do a top six, a top set, whatever. I did a top five. I'm from Tulsi Gabbard, who people know, she ran for president in 2020 as a Democrat. She was a member of Congress from Hawaii. She's since left the party very publicly, is sort of a conservative darling, military background, has a similarly skeptical view of U.S. foreign policy involvement in other countries and in other conflicts as Trump. Very telegenic. So he is considering her, so I have her at four. At three, I have Elise Stefanik, New York member of Congress. She's a member of the House. she, I think, is someone who Trump likes a lot, who Trump thinks would be loyal. I don't know if she's well-known enough for Trump to do it, but I think she's in the mix. At number two, I have J.D. Vance, who is a member of the Senate from Ohio, elected in 2022, populist like Trump, has very closely aligned himself to Trump, I think did himself some favors by endorsing Bernie Moreno in the Ohio Senate primary that was last month, that Moreno won, and Trump wound up endorsing Moreno as well. Is sort of a celebrity, obviously wrote the book Hillbilly Elegy before coming to Congress. I think Trump kind of likes that. So he's at two. And then at number one, and I've had him at number one, I've done these rankings a few times. I've had him at number one for a while now. At number one, I have Tim Scott from South Carolina. Like Haley, I think Scott makes some political sense in addition to the fact that he checks the boxes for Trump in that since dropping out of the 2024 race, he's been one of Trump's most high-profile surrogates on TV and on the campaign trail. Trump is having a huge fundraiser this weekend in Florida. Scott is an honored guest. Scott also is African-American, and I think would at least show Trump attempting to move beyond his white, rural, non-college-educated base. Whether that would work or not, again, it depends how much stock you put in, how much of what a VP can do. But for the moment, I have Scott number one. So that's my final four.
When is Tim Scott's wedding scheduled? I mean, I know that
This summer. Yes, this summer, right around the Republican convention, which you can raise your eyebrows at the timing of.
Well, yeah, maybe he could get married at the Republican convention. Exactly. That'd be something new.
They're already having a big party. He could probably save money.
Yeah, exactly. No question about that. Tim Scott debating Kamala Harris. Well, that would be intriguing. By the way, I've written similarly. I also think that Tim Scott is probably the most likely and would be a choice that probably helps Trump because he's such a deeply likable guy. There are very few people who hate Tim Scott. There are some people who hate Donald Trump. In fact, a former newsman just let loose with an indictment of Trump that is particularly intense. We will get to the comments by Dan Rather. Chris Saliza, again, Chris Saliza, you can reach him through Substack. It's Chris Saliza, C-I-L-L-I-Z-Z-A, .substack.com. We will be right back.
I'm a big Michael Medved fan.
The Michael Medved Show. More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show, Dan Rather, amazingly, still has a very active following on X, which used to be known as Twitter. He has 2.6 million followers. And he told them this week that he had a strong feelings about the presidential campaign. To say the least. The veteran journalist took to Twitter and explained why he vehemently opposes Donald J. Trump in his race to regain the presidency. It's not about politics, Rather wrote. I voted for both parties, Rather told his 2.6 million followers, for Republicans and Democrats in the past. It's not about me. As a patriot, it's about me rejecting a cheating, lying, racist, treasonous, fascist, and vile man who attacks the free press and wants to lead the country I love. Yeah, tell us how you really feel, Dan. I do think that there is a tendency to overstate, to say the least, to basically, on both sides, suggests that our opponents are not only incompetent, they not only are, oh, you can say that they're unethical or that they have only a nodding acquaintance with the truth, something like that. But once you start getting into the level of evil and they're trying to destroy the country, listen to how this actually echoes some of the rhetoric that Trump himself puts forward. It's about me as a patriot rejecting a cheating, lying, racist, treasonous, fascist, and vile man. These are exactly terms that Trump uses against his opponents. And we have a plenty of that, maybe too much. Thank you, Dan Rather. Meanwhile, we had got an email that came in from Jason in Salt Lake City. And he says, I have a conspiracy for any upcoming conspiracy days. Maybe you should have one. I have racked my brain for why Joe Biden would be running for president again when he is so unpopular and with the knowledge that a chimpanzee from the zoo could beat Donald Trump. I believe he is running because he knows that Kamala Harris will never win the presidency. So to make himself a hero, if he wins within a year or two of getting into office, he will step down so that Kamala can be the first female black president, which will reflect on him as heroic for his party. Terrible for the country, but a hero move for himself. Or nobody has the guts to tell him how senile he is, and he has a huge ego. But I think this is a hero move to get Kamala in a backdoor way. Okay, I don't buy it, Jason. Let me tell you why. If he seriously wanted Kamala Harris to be the nominee and to compete with President Trump. And do I think she would win that contest? I think highly unlikely. I think Kamala Harris is a singularly untalented politician and is going to have a tough time getting votes no matter what. However, if Biden stepped aside and said, I want Kamala to win and I want her to be my successor, I think there are very few Democrats who would turn him down because generally a sitting vice president, it was the same sort of thing. When Richard Nixon was running for president the first time in 1960, there are all sorts of people who wanted other Republicans like Nelson Rockefeller, who was then the governor of New York. Can you imagine Republican governor of New York? Served four terms. But in any event, there were people who wanted Nixon as an alternative, but because he had served two terms as vice president with Dwight Eisenhower, he had Eisenhower's endorsement. It was sort of a tepid endorsement. He was asked at a press conference at one point, Ike was, can you think of one important decision that Richard Nixon has made that has helped your administration? And he says, not right now. Give me some time and I'll think of one. And which was, he says he meant as a joke, which Eisenhower had a strange sense of humor. In any event, it is almost automatic. George Herbert Walker Bush was not a particularly popular politician when he was vice president. But as the sitting vice president after two terms for President Reagan, he absolutely won the nomination and went on to win the presidency. I think that what you're saying about Biden is true, and it's true of most politicians, talking about him having a gigantic ego. And I would give the guy some credit for at least some sincerity. He really does believe in himself, and he's running for president because at least according to people who know him and are familiar with his thinking, he is very worried about Trump winning. And he believes that as an incumbent with all of the advantages of incumbency, he actually is the Democrat who has the best chance to win. Concerning Kamala Harris, there is a new controversy involving a theory that she has about basketball. She had a hot take on March Madness with a hot mic. She was speaking to Spectrum News, and she had this to say. This is clip 5.
Do you know, okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know that women were not, the women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022? Think about that, and what that talk about progress, you know, better late than never, but progress, and what that has done, because of course when, you know, I had a bracket, it's not broken completely, but I won't talk about my bracket. But you know what, just how we love March Madness, and even just now allowing the women to have brackets and what that does to encourage people to talk more about the women's teams, to watch them. Now they're being covered, you know, and this is the reality. People used to say, oh, women's sports, who's interested? Well, if you can't see it, you won't be. But when you see it, you realize, oh.
Okay. Is this true that there was a blockage of women's basketball brackets? The one thing that I would say is for people who don't fill in the brackets, and I know, of course, President Obama was famous for doing that, but I mean, the idea that this is a conspiracy theory of sorts to block the advancement of women, I'm not sure people buy that. And again, what people buy in the brackets for the men and for the women is Cinderella stories and incredible underdog stories, like all of the attention that was paid to, what was it, North Carolina State, which is not to be confused with University of North Carolina or Duke or other North Carolina teams that are perpetual competitors in the brackets world. Speaking of perpetual competitors, there is a new series of revelations about Donald Trump and his Spotify playlist. Revelations, any real surprises? We will get to that. We will also be talking about anti-Semitism on campus and what some people of sincerity and conviction are attempting to do about it. We'll also be talking about some of the ongoing charges and problems in the relationship between America and Israel in the midst of this Gaza war in this greatest nation on God's green earth.